In Washington, Field Marshal Asim Munir increasingly looks like the man who can make Pakistan useful to the United States. Pakistan has just written Munir even more deeply into the architecture of the state, as he now sits atop a legally centralized command that reaches conventional forces, strategic systems, and the Prime Minister's national security advice. Munir, now formally serving as Chief of Defense Forces, speaks directly with President Donald Trump and has become Washington's principal channel for engaging Tehran. The latest restructuring of Pakistan's military command has actually made the opposite case. The 27th Constitutional Amendment, followed by legislation passed this month to implement the new command architecture, has concentrated unprecedented authority in Munir's hands. Yet his military cannot stabilize Pakistan-administered Kashmir, cannot contain the Tehrik-e Taliban Pakistan, TTP, and Baloch insurgents, and has still signed a mutual defense pact with Turkey and Saudi Arabia, dubbed the Mecca Accord, that could drag it into distant crises. For the world, treating Pakistan as a reliable intermediary in negotiations with Iran would be a mistake of timing and of judgment as the state becomes more militarized domestically, more ambitious diplomatically, and increasingly overstretched militarily. A field marshal above the state. In November 2025, the 27th Constitutional Amendment abolished the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Committee and created the Office of Chief of Defense Forces, CDF, held concurrently by the Army Chief. The restructuring was completed with another step this month when Pakistan's parliament passed the Defense Forces Act 2026 and amendments to the National Command Authority Act, providing the statutory framework for Munir's new position and headquarters. The new architecture gives the CDF a central role in operational command and joint military coordination across the armed forces. The new law places the Army, Navy, and Air Force under a unified Defense Forces headquarters commanded by Munir. He is designated the Prime Minister's principal military advisor on national security and defense, and exercises operational command and control across the services with sweeping personnel authority, hiring, firing, retirement, and extensions. Amendments to the National Command Authority law align nuclear and strategic command with the same hierarchy, with a new four-star commander of the National Strategic Command sitting alongside the CDF. The significance goes beyond military administration, as Munir now occupies a position from which military command, strategic security policy, and foreign policy influence converge. He is not constitutionally Pakistan's president or prime minister, but describing him merely as a military officer increasingly misses the political reality. Such radical consolidation of power in Pakistan's civil-military landscape matters for Washington because the United States is increasingly treating Munir personally as a diplomatic asset. Therefore, Washington must factor in that any Pakistani channel on Iran now runs, in practice, through a single command that answers first to its own institutional interests. Consolidation without control. The strongest argument against treating Munir's Pakistan as a reliable strategic partner can actually be found inside Pakistan itself. The military has acquired unprecedented institutional power, yet the state remains under enormous security pressure. Pakistan Institute for Conflict and Security Studies data show that July 2026 was the deadliest month of the year, with 606 people killed in militant violence and counter-militancy operations, including 112 security personnel and 401 militants. The violence is concentrated precisely in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, KPK, and Balochistan, where Pakistan's military has struggled for years. Such a security landscape is a sustained counterinsurgency burden for a military that is simultaneously presenting itself as a regional security provider. The latest round of violence in Pakistan-administered Kashmir has added another layer of security burden for an overly stretched military. In the surrounding areas of Ralkot, Pakistan-administered Kashmir, protests led by the Joint Awami Action Committee, JAAC, escalated after authorities outlawed the movement under anti-terrorism laws, suspended mobile data and internet services, and deployed security forces ahead of a JAAC-organized June 9 strike. According to a local human rights watchdog report dated August 8, at least 89 civilians died in Pakistan-administered Kashmir as a direct result of the state's brutal crackdown on unarmed protesters. Locals demanded cheaper power from dams that generate electricity for Pakistan, representation that is not diluted by non-resident seats, and an end to elite privileges. The state's answer was lethal force, sedition cases, travel advisories, and the criminalization of a civic coalition that had previously extracted limited subsidies through protest. That is the Balochistan playbook applied to a territory Pakistan still markets internationally as Azad or free. It did not produce consent but a ban movement, underground leaders, and a legitimacy crisis inside a territory the army treats as strategic hinterland. If Munir's new command structure was meant to deliver coherence, Kashmir shows the opposite, where a security establishment that can rewrite the constitution faster than it can address bread-and-butter revolt. An army that cannot manage a rights protest in Muzaffarabad and Rawalpindi without mass casualties is not an army that can be trusted to midwife a delicate regional settlement with Iran or be a reliable partner for the so-called Mecca Accord. Pakistan's utility should not be mistaken for reliability. U.S. talks with Iran already sit on a knife edge of economic D-Day politics, Hormuz control, and factional vetoes inside Tehran. None of this means the United States should abandon Pakistan, as that would be strategically simplistic. Pakistan remains nuclear-armed, sits between Iran, Afghanistan, India, and China, and retains diplomatic access across the Muslim world. Its ability to communicate with Tehran can be useful, particularly when direct U.S.-Iranian channels are blocked. Three factors that Washington should use to distinguish between utility and reliability while dealing with Munir's Pakistan. First, Munir's legal supremacy does not equal policy reliability. A CDF who is also Army Chief, Principal Advisor, and Strategic Command Fulcrum will filter any Iran file through the Army's need to look indispensable at home. That incentive points toward swagger, not quiet brokerage. Second, Washington cannot treat Islamabad's internal security failure as a side issue. An institution that answers civic protest in Kashmir with live fire and a terrorist ban is the same institution that would be asked to counsel restraint, verification, and de-escalation with Iran. The record says it prefers coercion when legitimacy frays. Third, Munir's capacity is already committed to a plethora of insurgencies. TTP and Baloch campaigns consume attention, ammunition, and men. A Mecca clause adds hypothetical external obligations without adding spare combat power. A partner that is simultaneously overcentralized and overstretched cannot deliver the one thing Washington would need from it: consistent, low-drama influence on a file that can restart a wider war. If the United States wants Pakistan to help mediate with Iran, it should judge Islamabad by the outcomes of that diplomacy, not by the personal access Munir enjoys in Washington. And if Washington wants Pakistan as a security partner, it should look beyond the impressive authority of its field marshal to the increasingly unstable state that authority is supposed to govern. A stronger Pakistani army does not automatically produce a stronger Pakistan. And a stronger Munir does not automatically produce a more reliable American partner. The Cipher Brief is committed to publishing a range of perspectives on national security issues submitted by deeply experienced national security professionals. Opinions expressed are those of the author and do not represent the views or opinions of the Cipher Brief. Have a perspective to share based on your experience in the national security field? Send it to editor@thecipherbrief.com for publication consideration. Read more expert-driven national security insights, perspective, and analysis in the Cipher Brief.